Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we'll still send it code 3.
Did you just touch my drum set?
Hey, knock it off!
Derek Kramer.
You sound insane. Do you realize that? You should be medicated.
Zach Jones.
F*** you, Brennan. I know you touched my drum set, and I want to hear that dirty little mouth admit it.
Kramer.
Out of my face.
Jones.
That's because you touched my drum set, because I know Pops doesn't start till 4.
Kramer and Jones. On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Cops doesn't start till 4, but Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, we're here with you from 1 to 3, filling in for One Bills Live as the Bills are on the bye week. We're almost through it. We are almost through the bye week. Made it to Friday. Congratulations, everyone.
We made it to Friday, and also, yesterday, I need to know, because I'm not it. I'm definitely closer to this than you are.
Mm-hmm.
But who else was 41 years old yesterday that had a great day?
I don't know. It was.
And I mean a great day.
That was fun to just see a lot of the older guys in sports. It's the two quarterbacks playing last night for Thursday Night Football with Rodgers and Flacco. But then you also have Max Scherzer going out on the mound and performing well. I don't want to say, you know, elite and exceptional and, oh my gosh, he's been well. And it was kind of fun to see. It was a lot of fun to watch, like, it not be a tire fire. I was fully expecting Thursday Night Football to be a disaster, and instead it's Flacco and Rodgers in an offensive show.
Right.
It's a blast.
You and I talked about it, and I dismissed it outright. I'm like, I'm not even close to watching this game. I'm watching Toronto and Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And turns out I missed probably the best Thursday night game of the slate this season.
So far, yeah.
Shame on me, I guess. But also, I watched a different 41-year-old dealing. You know, at the very least, playing well enough to shut it down. Hey, I need to know now, like, if anyone is 41 years old that's listening, did you have a great day yesterday?
Get yourself to Vegas now.
For science.
You get yourself to Vegas now.
Nope, you had to do it.
You had to do it yesterday. That's right.
You had to do it yesterday. Right. It's too late now.
So hopefully, you took advantage of what is being affectionately known as the Icy Hot Bowl, Unk Day. Very good.
It was probably Unk Day. And anyone else that's 41 years old, I'm having doubts that you had a bad day yesterday. As a matter of fact, I'm kind of jealous. My lower back would seem to disagree, but I am jealous.
That's why it's the Icy Hot Bowl yesterday in Thursday Night Football. I liked watching that those two guys were able to go after it. I also kind of liked that in some ways Mike Tomlin was proven correct. Like, why would you trade this guy in the division? Like, his fears were true. Now,
you want to talk about a coach that lives in fears all the time?
I know.
Despite having a quote that says we can't live in our own fears. Like,
but man, Flacco was dealing. He was dealing. 31 for 47, 342, 3 touchdowns. With this being said, he made sure to target the good players. 23 targets to Ja'Marr Chase, 10 to T. Higgins.
23?
He made sure that the good guys got the passes. But it was still, look, he came in. It's, what, his second week with the team? Yeah, I'm going to throw it to the really talented wide receivers I have. And to be fair, Rodgers has been doing the same thing for Pittsburgh. They don't have those guys, but DK Metcalf is good. Pat Freiermuth is good. Cool. I'm going to go to those two, and I'm going to do it often. Did you see Broderick Jones, though, tackle him after celebrating a touchdown? And Rodgers lost his mind. Hysterical. I, for the first time in years, very much sympathize with Aaron Rodgers.
Nope.
I would have lost my mind. You're tackling me to the ground? I'm 41.
My guess.
I am frail.
My guess is he didn't mean to tackle him.
Maybe not. But don't run at me at full speed and then fall over. You got to understand your body, brother. You got to understand your body.
He's excited and happy.
I totally sympathize with Rodgers.
I am going to quote Matt Bove on this one and say, oh, Aaron Rodgers doesn't like being shoved?
Well, look, I sympathize with Rodgers.
Nope.
The last thing but I also can't stand when like I see football players like smacking the helmets of their teammates. Like, dude, enough. Like, get out of my face for a minute.
I'm sorry. If I do something cool...
And don't even get me started on soccer. Don't even get me started on soccer.
If I do something cool at 41 years old in the 11-day power play, dogpile me.
See, I think they're celebrating, and then there's whatever some of this is. Like, again, Broderick Jones tackling Aaron Rodgers accidentally or on purpose. It doesn't really matter. It ends up happening.
I'm inviting it.
Or in soccer, a guy scores a goal, clearly has a celebration he wants to do and has been planning, what have you. But God forbid the defender that ran 500 yards doesn't immediately tackle him because he's so excited. Like, man, I'm trying to do my slide thing. I have, like, something under my shirt I want to pull up, and you just bull rushed me. Just give me 5 minutes.
No, that's what stoppage time is for. Do that after.
That's what I'm saying. Do it after. I'm going to do my celebration now, then you can get excited.
He can do it after.
But then the moment's gone. The moment's gone.
Nope, moment's not gone. Crest first.
No, man. I fell for Rodgers there because, again, he's 41 years old.
I don't feel bad for him at all.
And it doesn't help. Broderick Jones is not very good. So there's probably also that added weight if he sees the guy doing it. He's like, you? Really? Of all people? Defend me first.
The personality that Aaron Rodgers has become, I don't feel bad in the slightest.
Oh, that doesn't help. But I don't really want to be body slammed by people because I threw a touchdown pass. Like, just slap me up.
You know who probably would accept being tackled, throwing a touchdown pass to take a late lead? Joe Flacco.
I don't think so at all. I think a lot of these guys are like, dude, just get away from me. I'm already going to be sore tomorrow.
At the very least, he won't be as publicly heated.
He won't be as
Joe Flacco
would
pull
That's
him,
probably fair.
Joe Flacco probably knows to pull him aside in the locker room and go, bro, what are you doing? Can you not do that ever again, please?
I don't know. For me, again, bringing up their age, but tackle him, it's all fun and games until he hurts his hip or he busts up his shoulder.
But
then
that's
it's like,
not an
great.
Age requirement to tell someone not to do that.
No, but age plays a factor in it. I'm not the same young guy I was, you know, where I'd be okay after this. Now it's not. All because you're a little excited.
Again,
a little much.
There's a place to do that, and it's pull away into the locker room and go, buddy, no.
My guy.
Just straight up, no. Don't ever do that again. Not in public where all the cameras are on you because you just threw the touchdown pass. Yeah, no. I don't feel bad in the slightest there at all about Aaron Rodgers because, again, it just – it's the abrasive personality at this
right.
point.
Right, his personality over the last few years has not helped his case in any means. But
much like how Max Scherzer's screaming at his manager not to pull him out of the game, and if he gets rung up after that, like, you don't feel bad for that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you are in front of everybody. It's very much going to be all eyes are on you. All eyes are on you, Aaron Rodgers. Don't freak out like that. Because the first thing people are going to go with is, you are sensitive.
No, and that's fine, but I'm kind of okay with it. I think there's also a time and a place of certain celebrations. I don't think I have to be, I hate saying it like this, but like, correct because of where I'm at. Where it's like, dude, you tackled me. Seriously? You're 350 pounds and you're landing on top of me. I'd rather not deal with that after scoring a touchdown. But overall, very good game yesterday. The Jays won last night as well to keep the ALCS interesting because, God forbid, we got an interesting NLCS against the Dodgers.
Yeah, interesting.
That would be a crime against baseball.
Interesting is not the word I'd use anymore. You have a series.
You have just a flat-out series. A home team has yet to win a game. It has been all road teams. Seattle's playing host again tonight. We'll see how that goes.
If the Jays can sweep in Seattle and then you have to win one of two games at home, I like your chances, even though the trend would remain home teams are 0-5 now in this series. What gives?
Yeah.
In a sport where typically your home records are far and away better than your road records because of how baseball is formulated.
Right.
Home team gets last chance to score the runs. It is interesting to me that it's been like that so far in the ALCS. Right now, they're all in Seattle. I'm okay with it for one more game. Let it keep going for one more game.
Yep. First pitch tonight, 6:08 over on FS1, and then Dodgers-Brewers, 8:30 first pitch for them. Dodgers, of course, you could probably get through the context clues. They're up 3-0 in that series. They are a very good team. We'll talk a little bit of Jays and baseball coming up.
They are so annoying.
Yeah, they are. But we had a fun conversation yesterday with the Bills and kind of everything that's been going on with them and where we're at now. We're in the bye week. As we mentioned, we're almost through it. They're still sitting at 4-2. But where do they necessarily need to get better? What can they hide? What do they have to live with? Last 2 years, the Bills have made pretty sound trades to really unlock parts of their game. Rasul Douglas comes in 2 years ago, a corner. He all of a sudden becomes a interception machine, and he's really able to hold it down for them at that spot. Last year, it's Amari Cooper. While he doesn't flash in terms of constantly getting targets and being a wide receiver one that maybe we all wanted, he had moments of brilliance and also really just, I think, allowed the offense to open itself up and to be more free-flowing, where maybe before that they were so narrow-minded, narrow-visioned of, it's got to be Khalil Shakir, it's got to be through the run game. If we don't have that, we have nothing. Cooper kind of opened that up. And now we kind of sit at a very similar spot. I think this week, last year, they made the Cooper trade, and the Bills still have some pretty clear issues. Funny enough, some of their issues are actually the same positions they've traded for already, cornerback and wide receiver. Safety may also be a massive need for this team. They do have guys coming back on defense in Hoyt and Ogunjobi. We'll see about next week if Max Harrison's 21-day practice window opens up. That could be a long-term solution at corner, maybe not necessarily the short-term, but thinking more long-term for that into January and such. Harrison could play a role there. Same with Dorian Strong. We don't actually know what his neck injury is going to be. He was put on IR, but he still may be able to come back. And he was starting to, I think, really start to supplant Trey White as cornerback number two. On offense, though, outside of Josh Palmer and Dalton Kincaid, they have the full complement of guys that they're going to have. They're not really adding anybody through injuries or through suspensions. And so where we kind of got yesterday, or at least I did, was maybe adding to the offense is the way to go. Maybe you can live with this defense of, well, you're going to get a few guys back. It's not going to be the same team. They're probably not going to be one of the worst run defenses we've ever seen, definitely the worst this year. Pass defense maybe should get better. Maybe adding a guy like a Rashid Shaheed. And I don't think Chris Olave. Mike Schoep and Chris and Bulldog talked about this yesterday, kind of mentioning that if they really did go for someone like Olave, they're changing their identity. They're changing their philosophy. They're all of a sudden going to, yeah, you know what, that everyone eats thing didn't really work. This is our wide receiver one. We're going to pay him as such because they picked up the fifth year. New Orleans picked up the fifth year option, so you're going to have to. And we're going to go back to what we were doing before. I don't see that being a likelihood middle of October.
And I think that that's the part where it's you might need to give up on the idea. Mm-hmm. And this is something you and I talked about yesterday, too, of I'm starting to wonder if the scheme really does hold back the wide receivers on the boundary here on this team. I do wonder if Keon Coleman is unlocked in a different sense with a different offensive coordinator. I wonder if Josh Palmer is able to do more on a per-game basis, if he's able to be on an offense that allows the outside receivers to thrive a little more. I watch how other teams are utilizing their players. George Pickens is running free and wild, and he was brought in originally as the number two wide receiver on that team. They get CeeDee Lamb back, and they've got a bevy of options in Dallas. I watch the Saints with Chris Olave. I watch what Atlanta has done with Drake London, basically saying, you're our passing game. And it is hilarious, but like...
Yeah, they're down Darnell Mooney, and they're like, that's fine, you're just going to get a lot of targets.
But
now,
also, good Lord. I watch that game between Tampa and Seattle. Egbuka and Smith and Jigba both thriving for their respective teams. And it's not like any of these offenses are, well, I mean, outside of New Orleans, slacking in any means, in the slightest.
Mm-hmm.
And I do wonder if it is that predicated want and desire for balance that is holding the Bills back in a sense. At least offensively. To a point where it is just legitimately detrimental for the outside receivers on the Buffalo Bills. The leading receiver on the Bills did not play on Monday night and is a tight end. That's 46th in the league. Shakir's basically right behind him.
Mm-hmm.
But Shakir is yet to surpass Malik Nabers, who's missed two games already and will for the rest of the season, with a knee injury. A.J. Brown, who has been in tumultuous waters about his usage and involvement in that offense, is 13 yards behind Kincaid. I really do wonder what the outside receivers are going to look like when Joe Brady is inevitably hired by another team. He's not going to go the Bobby Slowick route. He's not going to go the Ken Dorsey route of getting fired after being considered for coaching positions. He's going to make it through this season, and it's going to be just fine. But I do think I'm at least curious now that scheme has more to do with this than we all originally thought.
Well, that was always the conversation, too, with Diggs. Once, you know, you'd gotten over, all right, he's gone. Now let's look at the big picture. You saw he became less effective once Brady took over. Him and Gabe Davis both became far less
effective. His numbers tanked.
Yep. And so I think there is credibility to it's the scheme. Now, the scheme can work. That's the thing. It has worked. They're still, I think, fourth in terms of total points per game. I think they're at now 27 or 28. But they're still fourth or fifth in points per game. They are still scoring very well. But they get into these ruts when one piece is removed. And you're looking at teams like San Francisco, who is down to Mac Jones. Brandon Ayuk hasn't played this year. You know, Juwan Jennings is not playing. And they're getting Kendrick Bourne going. They're getting Ricky Pearsall going. They don't even have George Kittle out there. And they're able to make that work. Where the Bills, you know, Brandon Bean really built up Josh Palmer being the new addition for the Bills, hasn't really done much this year. Loved the big play that he had against Atlanta, but before that, hadn't really done much. Keon Coleman this year is averaging under 10 yards per reception. So he's not even really getting the yak going or anything like that. And that's where I think many fans sit with the wide receiver position is, why am I actually looking around the rest of the league and seeing backup quarterbacks being able to just get it to these receivers running wide open? I fought a little bit against it because I'm like, well, you know, it's September. I don't necessarily want to see everything in the cookie jar. I don't want them to show everything against the New Orleans Saints, right? Or whoever in the first week of the season, the first month of the season. Now, though, you've lost two in a row, and you don't look like a team that is very creative. You look very stuck in the mud and don't really know where to go on offense. And it really does, again, look like Allen has to perform magic to get them going again. And when he can't, they're not going anywhere. The second half of that Atlanta game, they had ample opportunities to come back. Against New England, it's the turnovers that just keep them out of the game. They can't get going. And even in Atlanta, Allen has two picks. It's just they look so frustrated, I think is maybe the best way to put it. The offense looks so stagnant and frustrating because I think it is. That they have not found that second outlet. And I think that's maybe where you wonder, too. I agree. I don't think Brady's going to be the OC next year. But I do wonder if teams are going to start looking at him and going, got a little weird there in that second year, didn't it? Why?
Why? And there's a lot of ways to look at it. And I do think that the biggest point for me is how rough the offense looked without Dalton Kincaid in there on Monday night. And then I saw something. This is cherry picking a stat, I guess, to help a narrative, but I do want to make that clear before I mention it. Tight end receiving efficiency versus on-field snap, like the snap share. And this graph, Dalton Kincaid, in terms of yards per route run, is easily the best tight end in the league. He's on the field maybe 50% on the snap share on this graph. He becomes this very lone target where he's producing great, and it should be in like that top corner. But he's used half the time, and he's now sticking out like a sore thumb of, oh, he's underused.
Yeah.
And while I do agree that Sal mentions like maybe his efficiency has to do with the fact that he's fresh.
It's the CJ Spiller effect of like, ooh, do you actually want to use him more?
But the thing is I want to be curious enough to try.
Especially when I don't have anyone else telling me not to. It's not like Shakir. It's like, yeah, but you got to get Shakir 8 targets a game. Keon Coleman is who you wanted to. It's not like he's getting 6, 7, 8 targets a game.
Right. This is where everybody eats turns into a little bit of a detriment. And for the second year in a row, the best receiving option of the season misses a football game. And everything crashes to a halt. That is no longer an accident. That's what we call a trend.
And it's frustrating, especially with Kincaid. He misses the Atlanta game coming off of, I would argue, his best game as a Bill.
It was his best game.
6 targets, 6 catches, first time over 100 yards, didn't get in the end zone, but he was great. But to that point, even as the game was going on, I was wondering, why is he not being targeted more? He's clearly beating up a very good New England secondary. He's the problem child. He's the one New England can't.
He is their problem. Why is he not on the field more?
And why are you not just like, hey, he's eating. Let's keep going.
The injury makes it make more sense.
Right. You wonder. I mean, I know there was feelings too. Maybe he'd broken a finger on his hand. I mean, we eventually learned it's something entirely different. But even at the time, it felt like that. And I've heard people call Joe Brady stubborn. I think maybe there's something to that of wanting it to work. We've already had to have McDermott 2 weeks in a row discuss the getting too cute stuff.
Especially because of the fact that you try another one of those end arounds 1 week after being told, not being told, but maybe being told. I don't know.
Maybe
we're not in those rooms, but it's publicly said that it was too cute by the head coach. And you go ahead and you try it again and it's snuffed out again. I've also really seemed to notice that Brady and trick plays don't really work, do they?
No, and it also signifies kind of the end of a game where it's like, they're not going to win this. They're not going to win this. Like it goes
right.
It goes to hell fast, and you're like, yep, that's the sign from the football gods. This is over. Like just cut it out. We're done. It has that feel. Now, that's true of a lot of trick plays. I think for many people, they're exciting and they're fun, and that's absolutely true. I look at them a little bit differently of you need to run them to catch a better team off guard. There's a time and a place good teams run them. I'm not disagreeing with that. Kansas City made a living off of that in their peak years, in the red zone especially. But I think when, you know, Chicago pulls off a flea flicker, and I have people tweeting at me like, I wish Buffalo did this. I don't.
Ready?
Chicago's trying to build excitement. They're trying to be flashy. The Bills have moved on from their flashiness era. I think the problem is, though, they might have to marry flashiness with efficiency. And they have the quarterback to do that.
I think it's the opposite. They are so disciplined on efficiency that you no longer see flashy. So when they try flashy, it doesn't work.
It's good because
I've seen the Bills do a flea flicker.
Yeah.
It went for like maybe about 15 yards.
Well, yeah.
Which is the opposite of the intention of a flea flicker.
Because, yeah, like, I think you're right, though. Like they've gotten so stuck in their way. Sal brought this up with Mike and Chris as well on the defensive side of things. They beat it into the guy's head so much of don't let the big play happen. Don't let the big play happen. Don't get beat over the top. That now all of a sudden making a play in front of them becoming a problem.
The big plays are happening underneath them, and then they hit the second or third level, and it's over.
And so, you know, maybe that is something to think about with the Bills going forward. Is are they too rigid? Are they too stiff in their philosophies and how they want to do things both on offense and defense? And there isn't enough flexibility, not just to a season, but to a game. The Bills are very good coming out of the half. They have been for years under McDermott, whether people want to admit that or not. They are.
As a matter of fact, it's somewhat proven in that Atlanta game. The defense hemorrhaged in the first half. Probably the reason that you ultimately do, like, yes and no, like, ultimately lose the game. Like, yeah, you gave up a bunch of points, but they only give up three in the second half to keep you in the game actively.
To keep you alive.
The Bills do come out of the half right away and score a touchdown. They start getting stops. And all of a sudden, we've got a football game again. What was looking like a potential blowout is now stabilizing. Unfortunately, the offense doesn't get better from there. The defense gives you everything they have until it's just too late. And the offense still doesn't get anything done for you anyway. Even if they manage to block another field goal or like it misses or something like that, the offense still gave you nothing else after that.
Yeah. And so ultimately, with that being said, that's where I sit. With the trade deadline coming up and everything with that, I do find myself sitting here thinking they need to maybe add on the offense. If it's a scheme thing, it's a philosophy thing, and nothing's going to change, well, I'd like to find that out. And if you can add someone like Rashid Shaheed, who will be able to spread the defense out and draw coverage away and maybe allow Keon Coleman to be opened up a little bit more, Kincaid, Shakir, Palmer, then great. Where the defense, I saw it on Monday night. Even as hemorrhaged as they are, they could at least hold it together.
And I will argue the other side of that on the other side of this break.
803-0550, the number to call. What do you want to see the Bills do with the trade deadline coming up? We've had a great time talking about this week. We'd love to keep that going. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, filling in for One Bills Live today. This is WGR.
When people say, where is their X receiver? Where is the guy who's like, man, that guy that you're saying, hey, in crunch time, this is who we got to go to. To me, it's James Cook. And I'm finding a million ways to get him the football. I think you even look at like San Francisco and what they do with Christian McCaffrey. I think of the big moments of the Bills in the playoffs in the years past. I think of the big moments and big games for them. To me, it goes back to not just a Josh Allen crazy play, big runs from James Cook, big possessions where they give the ball to him a lot and they get some momentum and get going offensively and it opens everything else up for him.
Andrew Whitworth giving his thoughts on the Bills offense, and for him it runs through James Cook, and probably right.
When that's how the offense is operating,
when the rushing attack is going, they are humming. I don't think that's even really arguable. The thought process is there though, is yeah, but if they stop James Cook, do you have second option? Do you have something for your MVP quarterback to get the ball to? I think they do in Dalton Kincaid. I like Khalil Shakir. After that, I think it's a real big question mark for what you have.
And I think that it has to do with the fact that it is the – I'm getting more and more to it's the offense's identity. It's the coordinator's identity. It's – they wear their identity on clothing.
Yeah.
This is kind of not a secret. And it's very public – what they want, or at least what Brady wants his offense to look like, to a point where I saw a wide receiver who is doing just fine this year, by the way, in Stephon Diggs, have his numbers tank in Buffalo in the half of the season that Brady takes over.
Mm-hmm.
Said wide receiver forces his way out of Buffalo and has been just fine after a major knee injury. Probably would be your best receiver on the roster if he was retained. But this offense does not emphasize boundary receivers. We're seeing a lot about film breakdown about how the wide receivers are not getting open. Then help them. Scheme it. They're NFL route runners. You cannot tell me that you cannot create a play to create somebody open. They are still NFL athletes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing Tyquan Thornton get plays that chalk him up wide open in Kansas City.
Yeah, because we talked about that to start the year of the too high safety, and it's been played a lot in the NFL. And look, with the Bills, they played a lot, but you're also now starting to see defenses going a little bit away from that because you're getting beat. It's a lot like with the Bills defense as a whole, where, cool, we're not letting up the big play, but we're letting teams drive 12 to 15 plays on us Because everything in front, they're just taking it.
Intermediate passing attacks still should be a thing on two high safety.
Mm-hmm.
If you're playing a base cover two, there's also, especially when you're playing a cover two, if you're playing the zone on the boundary, if you attack it right, you get a player in the flat, you get a player to attack that sideline just above where the corner is, you get away from the hook curl zone. Right on that sideline before the safety can get down there in time, you go one deep. You go one to the sideline on a post or an out route, and you get the flare out so that you draw the corner up into his zone. A simple
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcast.
Flood concept.
Probably works. I don't want to like make it sound like.
And I don't think it's that easy,
no,
so to
right,
say.
Right.
Because I'm a nobody talking into a microphone. But I at least understand schematics enough that there is a mix of a talent issue, but at the same time, I'm seeing San Francisco trot whatever receiver is healthy out there, and they lead the league in passing in yards per game.
I mean, it's also just trotting out whatever quarterback's healthy.
With two quarterbacks.
Yeah, it's Mac Jones and Brock Purdy going back and forth. Who's not, healthy, who's not.
And neither of which I would call an MVP candidate, much less a past winner of one. Or who I would call either of them a top 10 quarterback in the National Football League. I think that's easy to say. And it's not like San Francisco's current wide receiver room is made of game breakers.
No, but San Francisco might also be a curious one to look at. I listen a lot to John Middlecoff. He's on the Volume, Colin Coward's podcast network, and he used to be a former scout, and he worked around the league. But he's based out of the West Coast, and he talks a lot about the 49ers. And when talking about Kyle Shanahan, most people acknowledge Shanahan's one of the best offensive minds in football. I don't really think that's anything crazy to say. That's probably true. He's choked in big moments, no doubt. But it is curious to see how good their passing attack has been, how they're able to kind of just get whoever open. And yet, you know, Middlecoff, when talking about them, is always like, yeah, but like they're so predicated on the run. They're so predicated. They need to get the run game going. It's the Shanahan offense.
Right.
You could look at Buffalo and what they've gotten. It could be the exact same thing.
It could be.
But where the 49ers seem to use the run to get the pass game open, it doesn't look like the Bills really are able to do that. Their passing game oftentimes just feels like it's Allen working magic with people. We've heard this, by the way, for years. It even goes back to Dable.
Right.
Where, why does it look so difficult? You know, why is no one just open that Allen can just, boom, first read, go? Mahomes and the Chiefs have done this for years. Now, you're also looking at Andy Reid and Kyle Shanahan. If you want to go to the Rams, you know, with Puka Nacua, like he just happens to be open. Why? Like, these are some of the best offensive minds ever.
Yeah, with Sean McVay running that, yeah.
But this is also, I think, to many people's point of, yeah, that's why you get out-coached in the playoffs, is that Brady maybe isn't that ascending offensive talent that you're just like, I mean, yeah, like he's going to be one of the best offensive minds in the sport, no doubt. Where instead I think he's just maybe pretty good, and he's got an all-world quarterback and a Pro Bowl running back to work with.
And that will be good enough typically to land you an offensive coordinator position.
Mm-hmm. And to keep it. And to keep it.
Or a head coach position, head coach. I should say. Oh, hey, Brian Daboll. But at the same time, if you prove to be struggling with said quarterback, that's how you end up getting fired.
Mm-hmm.
See a Ken Dorsey, who then goes to a different team and then also gets fired. But while, again, I want to emphasize, Brady's not Dorsey, and thank goodness for that. That said, it is getting to a point where I no longer, A, understand the mantra, and B, I no longer want it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because of, oh, big wide receivers and big numbers equals big fun. No, I'm looking at the schematics and thinking, maybe the wide receivers that you have can be utilized under a different system.
Well, people talk about that with Keon Coleman.
Yes. Right?
He's just not being used correctly.
He's not being...
probably 100% right.
And it's... We had a caller yesterday. I think it was Jerry. He mentioned the 50-50 ball terminology.
You know, it's ridiculous to build around for that.
And the problem is that a 50-50 is... That's a lot of percentage for a not good play.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't we design plays that are getting these receivers open? You mentioned James Cook on the wheel route, and that's part of good play design, and Allen just doesn't throw it. Part of it's also sometimes on Allen, and it's okay to criticize the quarterback if he's not playing up to par. And over the last two games, that's been the case. I have more faith in Allen than I do the offensive scheme on how the offense will improve. Because I have a track record.
Mm-hmm.
It's still infuriating, to say the least, because of the fact that, and this is why we go about talking about the trade deadline thing. I'm foregoing my desire to acquire a wide receiver because offensively it's not going to change anything schematically that the Bills are going to do.
Yes, that's if more I can where you're
add,
at. Yeah.
If I can add an athletic safety, if I can add a guy who's rangy, the Bills clearly trust Cole Bishop in the box. Send him on blitz pickup or send him on blitzes, send him on support, send him to be an aggressor. He's tied for the lead in sacks. He gets home. And if I can have somebody more reliable than Taylor Rapp to command the back of my secondary, it might improve the defense a lot more because it's not just the run game anymore that the defense is struggling with. It's everything. And when it comes to the passing game, look, I can't do much about the funk that Christian Benford's in. He has zero pass deflections on the entire year. I can't help that. At least not in that sense.
No, and even his passer rating, and I know it's passer rating, it's not everything, but last year it was 86.6 allowed against him. This year it's at 122.1.
With the current roster, I can't help him.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can get a safety that's more reactive, quicker to the ball, more rangy, able to make plays, be that center fielder type, all of a sudden you don't have to be running as much of a too high. You can run three and let Benford be part of that deep third. You can run three and let Trey be the hook curl and let the safeties take the two halves.
Mm-hmm.
Or the two thirds, sorry, and then Benford the other third. You can run more like that and be a little bit more careful that you don't want Trey getting beat deep. You can make a little bit more protections if you upgrade the safety position.
You can be more versatile.
You can be more versatile. You can be more rangy. And it's about getting another athlete that can get to plays on time. Because right now I see Taylor Rapp and I don't see that from him.
No, he's late to almost everything.
He's late to almost everything. And it's tough. That's why I'm at safety. I'm at safety first, corner second, wide receivers down the list.
Mm-hmm.
because I believe the Bills can benefit on defense. And yes, you said it's probably a survivable thing. I'm here to say it's not.
Yeah, you're more pointing to it. We have hit DEFCON 1 with that defense.
It's not even that it's DEFCON 1. I don't want to be the Cowboys this year.
Mm.
Where I need my offense to score 30 points a game just to maybe win. The Bengals of last year. That is what they're looking at. If I can do anything to fix it, that should be my priority. Because how do you win a championship? It is still a complete game. How'd you lose 13 seconds? Wasn't the offense's fault?
No.
You need a complete team. Oh, but the coin toss. Yeah, what about the coin toss? You still need to trot a defense out there to defend, because the Bengals, 1 week after that debacle, proved that to be the case. You want to stick to the principle of the defense let you down? Then I would be using my first priority on a trade deadline acquisition to improve my secondary. Because the pass rush, they're 10th in sacks in the league. Give me a better safety.
I will say, just on the defense, the two games they've lost gave up 23 and 24 points. I'm not saying they've done everything well, but I'd argue for most of the year they've done more than enough. And they are wounded, where the offense, for the most part, healthy and still struggling. You miss Kincaid for a game, yes, and Palmer goes down, but for the most part, you have your compliments there. And the most important part is there.
But that's the other thing. They're wounded, so they can't even be better.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. We'll take your calls after this quick timeout. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer filling in for One Bills Live. This is WGR. Our number one continues to roll along here. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer filling in for One Bills Live. Talking Bills offense and defense, what actually needs to get improved as we tread closer and closer to the deadline. I'm more at the offense, but Derek, I think you do make an interesting point of, would it really matter? The Bills offense coordinator and Joe Brady might be stuck in his ways, and this is how I do things. I don't use boundary receivers.
It's not necessarily stuck in his ways, but I'm looking at trends at this point, and mm-hmm. I'm thinking it's starting to make sense, and I'm looking at impact. What's going to be more impactful for me?
Yeah, would bringing in a Rashid Shaheed be as impactful as just an athletic safety?
If you can get me a safety that knows the basics of defenses, and, I mean, look, say what you will about the guy. If there's someone that I can trust to at least get a safety in season ready to go, I'm probably going with the guy that used to play safety. Sean McDermott.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, with what Taylor Rapp has become this year, I've become immensely frustrated with him. But I also think that might have been Rapp is getting scolded for taking out teammates too often.
And so now he's got to pull back. And
he's got to pull
back.
And
now he's arriving late.
And now he's arriving late. Bishop is, I'm seeing optimism out of him. Like, yeah, the tackling's still not great.
He plays for the Buffalo Bills. That's just par for the course.
That's the team right now.
That's par for the course right there.
Which, it's not excusable, but I'm starting to see the vision with Bishop again. Like, I'm back to it. I was bullish on the safeties this year in the first round and through the entire draft. I was even hoping for the likes of, like, a Kevin Winston, Xavier Watts, Billy mm-hmm. Bowman to be added on this team. I get none of them. And, like, that's fine. But can we do it? Can we have a...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. PNC's apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Redo there in the trade market. Safeties on the downside of where I'm arguing this is are not as available as a wide receiver could be.
You notice I'm bringing up a receiver name, but I don't really have a safety name I can just throw out there.
Yeah, like I would love for the Bills to go and try to like talk to Arizona about Buda Baker. It's probably not happening.
Yeah.
It's a dream.
Mm-hmm.
Like we had a caller yesterday about Justin Simmons. Why is he not on an NFL team? There might be a reason for that.
Yep. 803-0550, the number to call. Let's get to the phones. And Ryan is first up this segment. Ryan, how we doing?
Great, Josh. Derek, great show. Happy Friday, guys. So a couple of things I want to talk to you guys about. I want to also, Bills coming off a bye week, they're going to be facing Carolina. Same team they Carolina beat Atlanta, 30-0 at home. By the way, Carolina 3-0 at home. I understand McDermott is 8-0 off the bye week. I really don't care, to be honest. Rico is going to go off on them unless they fix his defense, run defense in the bye, which I highly doubt it. Thirdly, I want to talk about Mr. Brandon Bean. This guy has never picked a wide receiver in the first round. Only thing he had was Stephon Diggs, which he traded away his first-round pick to get Stephon Diggs to Minnesota. Guess what Minnesota did? They picked Justin Jefferson. That's where the whole mess, this roster is messed up from that. If you would have had Justin Jefferson without that trade, I guarantee we would have had a championship by now. And also, he traded away to KC to pick Coleman. And then after that, Ladd McConkey was on the roster, and the San Chargers picked him after Coleman. Imagine we would have had Ladd McConkey on the team. Yeah, this is a disaster by Bean. Bean needs to be called out. Now, this guy's driving, going around, oh, I need a receiver? Bro, what were you thinking when you went on the morning show with Jeremy and Joe? Come on, bro. This guy needs to be called out, guys. Come on, I need to talk on this. Thank you.
Yeah, Ryan, thanks for the call. I mean, I've been giving my thoughts for months.
Yeah,
I mean, I think he's been a pretty poor drafter for years. I'm not going to the Jefferson Diggs thing. Diggs was incredibly successful for the Bills.
Diggs was the right call for what they needed. And it's also not a guarantee that Justin Jefferson is selected by the Bills. And you mentioned it in the last segment. Jefferson is fighting a little bit of a stigma. Well, off air, you said this with me, though.
When he was coming into the league.
When he's coming into the league, he had a stigma of being the slot receiver. And the Bills had Cole Beasley. So, improper scouting sometimes leads to a team benefiting on that sort of thing. That team was Minnesota. The Eagles infamously grabbing Jalen Reagor before him and paying the price for that for a couple of years. But even Philadelphia, they go ahead and turn back on their mistake. Throw a first rounder at Tennessee, get John Robinson ultimately fired in season.
Yeah.
When they trade AJ Brown to Philadelphia. But Diggs at the time there, I'm not going to go revisionist on that one. He was exactly what they needed, and his career in Buffalo was great until Joe Brady takes over.
803-0550, the number two call. Rich, we'll get to your call next at the top of the hour if you hang on there. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, you're listening to WGR.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air. And we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.